Part 1. The Splendid Lights. In this book it is written of the Sphirot and the paths, of spirits and conjurations, of gods, spheres, planes, and many other things which may or may not exist. It is immaterial whether they exist or not. By doing certain things, certain results follow. Students are most earnestly warned against attributing objective reality or philosophic validity to any of them. Aleister Crowley, Magic in Theory and Practice. The Kabbalists, like the Gnostics, set out to answer questions which confront any religious thinker. If God is good, how has evil entered the world which God created? If God is merciful, why is there pain and suffering in life? If God is limitless, infinite, and eternal, what is the connection between God and a world which is finite, limited in space and time? By definition, God is unknowable, for God is limitless, and to be known is to be limited. But then how can man know God? The Kabbalah gives two main answers to these questions. The first answer is that God is the total of all things. Every idea contains its own contradiction, and God, who is the sum of all ideas, contains all contradictions. God is at one and the same time good and evil, merciful and cruel, limitless and limited, unknowable and knowable, and all these opposites are united in the greater whole which is God. The second answer is that the connection between God and the world is indirect. It is as if God were a mirror from which shines a great light. The light is reflected in a second mirror, which reflects it into a third, and this into a fourth, and so on. With each reflection, the light and the mirrors lose something of their pure glow, until at last the light shines dimly from the cracked and tarnished surface of our finite evil world. In the beginning, all that existed was God and nothing. God sent out into the nothing an emanation from himself, often described as a light. And from this came a whole succession of emanations. There were 10 of them altogether, each successive emanation containing less of the divine substance. The 10 emanations are called the Sphirot, S-E-P-H-I-R-O-T-H, numbers or categories. In typically paradoxical language, the Zohar explains that, quote, "The aged of the aged, the unknown of the unknown, has a form and yet has no form. He has a form whereby the universe is preserved, and yet has no form because he cannot be comprehended. When he first assumed the form of the first emanation, he caused 9 splendid lights to emanate from it, which, shining through it, diffused a bright light in all directions. So is the holy aged an absolute light, but in himself concealed and incomprehensible. We can only comprehend him through those luminous emanations, which again are partly visible and partly concealed. These constitute the sacred name of God." Unquote. The splendid lights of the Sphirot constitute the sacred name of God because they are God's identity. The universe is God, and the Sphirot are parts of God, facets of God's or the universe's personality. They also provide a path by which man can reach God. From classical times down to the 16th century, it was generally accepted that the universe is made of 9 spheres which are arranged like the skins of an onion, one outside the other. The outer skin is the sphere of God as prime mover. Inside it is the sphere of the stars, and inside this again are the 7 spheres of the 7 planets. The innermost sphere belongs to the moon, and the earth hangs inside it. In the early centuries after Christ, the idea spread through the Mediterranean world that the soul comes originally from God and descends through the 9 spheres to earth, where it is imprisoned in a human body. The soul longs for a reunion with God and can achieve it by climbing back through the spheres to heaven. But each sphere is guarded by angels, and the space between the earth and the moon is crowded with legions of devils. Even when the soul has successfully negotiated the devils, the guardians of the spheres will try to turn it back. Only those initiated into the secret traditions know the passwords which will make the guardians yield and open their gates for the soul to continue on its way to God. Again, it is knowledge which clears the way for the soul, not the leading of a good life. When the soul leaves God and makes its way down through the spheres to earth, it gathers characteristics from each sphere in turn. Qualities of courage and ferocity come from the sphere of Mars, for instance, the ability to love from the sphere of Venus. These characteristics are added to the soul like skins or garments in layers, each layer outside the one before. The last garment, or outer layer, which comes from Earth, is the physical body. At the end of the process, the soul is like an onion with several skins, a miniature image of the onion-shaped cosmos itself, though the layers are in the reverse order. When death comes, the soul sheds its skins, first the physical body, and then the other layers one by one, as the soul rises through the spheres towards God. The Kabbalah is based on this theory of the soul's descent and ascent through the spheres, though it has 10 spheres instead of 9, because the Kabbalists were influenced by Pythagorean theory. Earth is given a separate sphere, the last sphera. Above this are 7 spherot, corresponding to the 7 planets, with 2 more spherot at the top, which are the spheres of the stars and the prime mover. Man achieves union with God by climbing up through the spherot to reach their source. Each sphera is guarded by an order of angels, and these guardians will try to turn the climber back. And in the lower spheres, there are plenty of sinister intelligences that are very ready to trap an aspiring soul which is ignorant or careless. Although many Kabbalists have led devout and blameless lives, thick veins of magic and sorcery are not far beneath the Kabbalah's surface. The essential doctrine of the Kabbalists is that death is not a necessary preliminary to the soul's ascent through the spheres. The soul can climb the ladder of the spherot while still in the body, and man can make himself God on earth. The 10 spherot are the great driving forces which move the universe and the impulses which move man. As he rises through the spheres, the magician knows and becomes and controls the powerful force of each sphera. Paul Ricci, a Jew-turned-Christian who became professor of Greek and Hebrew at the University of Pavia in 1521, said that the law of the Kabbalah, quote, enumerates many sacred names to be invoked, and various bodily movements, breathing and posture exercises, by means of which we attain more easily and beyond the use of nature to the glories of the Eternal Father and our prerogatives in this world which resemble them, unquote. The process of the Kabbalah is a search for God, but it can also be an attempt to wield the magical power which belongs to man as the potential God. Occult groups which teach the techniques of the ascent through the spheres frequently have 10 ranks or grades corresponding to the spherot. In Crowley's A.A., the student began as a neophyte, sphera 10, the sphere of earth, and next became a zelator, 9, the moon, in which rank he had to achieve proficiency in certain practices which resemble yoga. As Practicus, 8, Mercury, he completed his intellectual training and studied the Kabbalah. As Philosophus, 7, Venus, he completed his moral training and was tested in devotion to the order. The next grade, Adeptus Minor, 6, the sun, involved the attainment of the knowledge and conversation of the holy guardian angel, a rite of sex magic to which Crowley attached great importance. As an Adeptus Major, 5, Mars, the adept obtained a general mastery of practical magic, including such matters of detail as securing wanted objects, gold, books, women, and the like, opening locked doors, finding treasure, or having armed men at command. Moral, Crowley says cheerfully, become an Adeptus Major. It was also his duty to rule the members of the lower grades, quote, with balanced vigor and initiative in such a way as to allow no dispute or complaint. He must employ to this end the formula called the beast conjoined with the woman, unquote. The next grade, Adeptus Exemptus, 4, Jupiter, completes in perfection all these matters. The adept now either becomes a brother of the left-hand path or crosses the abyss which lies between manhood and godhead to reach the 3 highest spherot and becomes a magister templi, 3, Saturn, who tends his garden of disciples and obtains a perfect understanding of the universe. The Magus, too, sphere of the stars, quote, attains to wisdom, declares his law, and is a master of all magic in its greatest and highest sense, unquote. Finally, the Ipsissimus, one, sphere of God, quote, is beyond all this and beyond all comprehension of those of lower degrees. He is wholly free from all limitations soever, existing in the nature of all things, without discriminations of quantity or quality between them. Unquote. 10 is the number of the ineffable Sphirot, the Sefer Yetzirah says. 10 and not 9, 10 and not 11. Understand this wisdom and be wise in the perception. The 10 ineffable Sphirot have 10 vast regions bound unto them, boundless in origin and having no ending, an abyss of good and of ill. The Sphirot are 10, not 9 or 11, because they are the numbers from 1 to 10, the essential numbers of the Pythagoreans, which are the basis of all things. The 10 vast regions are the departments of the universe which the driving forces of the Sphirot control. The Sphirot are usually shown in a diagram called the Tree of Life, Diagram 4, which is an illustration of the underlying pattern of the universe and its fundamental unity. The tree spreads its branches through the whole of creation and reconciles all diversity in unity, for though it has many branches, it is one tree, and all the phenomena of the universe are leaves and twigs and branches of a connected whole. The tree is a model of God, the universe, and man. It is a classification of everything. Nothing exists which cannot be placed in one or other of its 10 pigeonholes. The tree consists of 3 triangles, with the 10th sphera, Malkut, left over at the bottom. Each triangle contains 2 opposing forces and a 3rd force which balances and reconciles them. The Sphirot run from right to left on the tree because Hebrew is written from right to left. Those on the right side of the tree are male and positive, those on the left or evil side are female and negative, and the ones in the middle which reconcile the opposites are bisexual. The tree does not always fit nearly with either astrology or numerology. The spheres of Saturn, Mars, and Mercury are all classified as female, but the sphere of Venus is male. In some cases, the significance of a sphera's number follows its standard meaning in numerology, but in others it does not. The tree is sometimes shown as a man's body, the upper triangle being his head, the middle triangle his trunk and arms, the lower triangle his genitals and legs, and it is based on the analogy between man and God. The Sphirot are the steps of the processes by which God created the universe. If God is man writ large, this process must have paralleled the human creative process. In the tree's first triangle, male impregnates female, and new life, the child or the universe, is born. In the second triangle, father and mother nourish and guide the child through infancy and adolescence. In the third triangle, the child grows up, the universe is a finished product. The system of correspondences, greatly amplified by McGregor Mathers and Crowley, identifies the 10 vast regions which the Sphirot control. Mythical animals and classical gods are included, because they have their reality in the mind of man, and therefore in the mind of the universe. The first triangle on the tree shows the creative forces in God and the universe. Keter, the first emanation, is the force of God as prime mover, first cause, the One. It is guarded by the 4 living creatures of the first chapter of Ezekiel, which had the likeness of a man. Its magical image, the mental picture on which the Kabbalist concentrates in meditation, is an old bearded man seen in profile. Zeus and Jupiter, the ruling gods of Greece and Rome, were the classical personifications of Keter. Its symbols are the crown for kingship and the point, which stands for One. The soul which can reach this sphere achieves union with God. God contains 2 great opposing forces or principles, active and passive, which are the next 2 Sphirot, the father and mother of the universe. Chochma, two, male, is the active principle, the force behind everything which is positive, dynamic, thrusting, male. It is the force which originates and causes all activity, and it rules all growth, evolution, change, movement. This is shown in its angels, the wheels of Ezekiel, which moved about, rolling to and fro, and which had the spirit of life in them. Chochma corresponds to the life-giving spirit of God brooding on the waters in Genesis, and to the Logos of St. John's Gospel, the creative word with which God made the world. It is the wisdom of God, God's active creative thought. The analogy between mental creativity and sexual creativity is constantly drawn in occultism and also in language. The words genius and genital come from the same root. Chochmah's symbols are phallic, the phallus, the tower, and the straight line, which is also a symbol of two, connecting two points. In Greek mythology, Uranus was the wise god who impregnated earth and was the father of nature and man. The opposite sphera, Bina, three, female, is the passive principle in God called the mother, the throne, the great sea. Chochma acts and Bina is acted upon. Chochma thrusts and Bina responds. Chochma is the active wisdom of God. Bina, the passive understanding of God. Chochma is the life-giving spirit. Bina, the waters of chaos which are lifeless, but from which, once fertilized, all things come forth. Bina stands for everything which is negative, malleable, potential rather than actual, female. Its symbols are female sex symbols, the ties, the cup, the circle, oval, and diamond. Its deities are mother goddesses, including the sinister Hecate, the ruler of witchcraft and sorcery. Bina is the principle of inertia and stability, and anything which remains stable and unchanging is said to be under its influence. Many of the Gnostics believed that the one became two by thinking, so that there was a mind and a thought. The thought was the first emanation from God and was the mother of all things. In the Kabbalah, the thought is split in two, the active wisdom and the passive understanding, and their union is the foundation of the universe. The rest of the Sefirot are the product of the union of Chochmah and Bina, which means that everything in the universe results from the interaction of active and passive, positive and negative. According to a modern English Kabbalist, Diane Fortune, quote, everything rests upon the principle of the stimulation of the inert yet all potential, Bina, by the dynamic principle, Chochmah, which derives its energy direct from the source of all energy, Keter, God. In this concept lie tremendous keys of knowledge. It is one of the most important points in the mysteries. Unquote. The female Sefirot on the left of the tree all combine good characteristics with distinctly evil and ominous ones. The perplexing contrariness of woman, who is maiden and hag, mother and harlot, tender and cruel, cold and passionate, illogical but discerning, passive but fecund, inert yet all potential, is firmly built into the Kabbalah. Bina is the mother of all life, but is also the sphere of Saturn, the planet of death, fate, the cruel and inexorable scythe of time. And in magic, the force of Bina is used in attempts to kill. Crowley identifies Bina with the woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars of revelation, a personification of beauty and fertility, and also with Babylon, the scarlet woman, the great whore, Babylon the great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth, who sitteth upon many waters, arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication, drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Every idea contains its opposite, however, and Crowley says that Chochmah is the divine word and the lamb of revelation, but also the great beast and the dragon which attacks the woman clothed with the sun. Again, many of the Gnostics believe that the divine thought fell into defilement, usually as a result of either curiosity or desire, and the eventual result was the creation of the visible world, the world which mingles life and death, love and hate, beauty and filth. The Gnostic Simon Magus maintained that the first divine thought was the mother of various lower powers which created the world. These powers captured the thought and kept her prisoner in the world, shutting her up in a woman's body. For untold ages, she passed from one female incarnation to another, gradually sinking lower and lower into degradation until she became a common prostitute. Simon took about with him a woman called Helena and said that she was the fallen thought found by him in a brothel. He himself was God come to redeem her. She had been the Helen for whose sake the Trojan War was fought, and this is the source of the story of Faust and Helen of Troy. Simon called himself Faustus, the favored one. In human terms, the Sphirot in the tree's second triangle are father, mother, and child. In the universe, they are the forces which govern evolving life and the life force itself. Chesed, for male, stands for the kindly and merciful authority of the father, who protects the child and guides him along the right paths. Four is the number of solidity, the visible form of things, and chesed is the force which organizes things and builds them up. In the human body, for example, it governs the building up of food into tissue. It is the force behind all constructive energy, civilization, law and order, justice, peace, love, benevolence. The unicorn stands for virility and power, as in Psalm 22. But my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of an unicorn. Chesed's symbols are the scepter, the wand, and the crook, which are the kings, the magicians, and the bishops, emblems of authority, and are also phallic, and the pyramid and equal-armed cross, symbols of four. The angels are the flames of the fire from which the living creatures appeared, and so stand for fatherhood. The force of Jupiter is used in magical operations of friendship and in attempts to gain money and worldly success. The opposite force is Gebura, five, female, which is the sphere of Mars, and the force appealed to in operations of hatred and destruction. It is the strict and severe authority of the mother, who disciplines and punishes the child. Chesed builds things up, Gebura breaks them down. In the human body, it rules the breaking down of tissue and the expenditure of energy. It lies behind all destructive energy, hate, rage, cruelty, war, havoc, retribution. Nature red in tooth and claw. The mythical basilisk is a ferocious creature whose breath and eyes deal death, though in modern biology the name is inappropriately applied to a harmless South American lizard. In plants, the force of Gebura appears in the stinging nettle, and in Nux Vomica, from which strychnine is obtained. Its symbols are those of violence and punishment, the sword, spear, scourge, and chain, and also the pentagon and the Tudor rose, which are symbols of five. The interplay of Chesed and Gebura, of construction and destruction, governs all life and nature. The balancing force between them is Teferet, six, the sphere of the sun. The sun unites them both in itself, shining warmly on men, beasts, and crops, with the nurturing benevolence of Chesed, blasting and withering them with the fierce heat of Gebura. Tiferet is the vital energy of the life force, the drive which impels life to continue. Its angels, the Shinanim, ride in chariots like the chariot of the sun. Christian Kabbalists associate it with Christ, who brought the promise of eternal life to men. Tiferet is the son of Keter, God, in the sense of being directly descended from it on the tree, and the symbolic association of Christ and the sun goes back almost to the earliest days of Christianity. In physical terms, Tiferet is the heart which pumps the lifeblood through the body in a circular motion like the sun's apparent circling of the earth. In psychological terms, it is the enlightened consciousness, the human mind raised to the highest spiritual condition which it can achieve in any normal state. The higher spheres can only be attained in supernormal states. Tiferet's symbols are the Calvary cross and the cube, which stands for six because it has six sides. Six is the number of balance and harmony, and Tiferet is the tree's central sphere to which the others are connected in a balanced arrangement. Its force is used in magical operations of harmony and friendship, and also in attempts to discover buried treasure, because the sun is linked with gold. The spiritual experience of a soul which reaches this sphere is a realization of the underlying harmony of all things, and a vision of the crucifixion, of death as the gateway to new life, as Christ died to rise again, and as the sun sets in the evening to rise again at dawn. The golden lion, its mane like tongues of fire, is traditionally a beast of the sun. The child and the phoenix stand for mortality and immortality, the endless cycle of birth, death, and new birth through which all life passes. In the third triangle, the child comes to manhood. The influences which play upon him are the opposing forces of animality and mentality, of impulse and thought. Netzach, 7, male, is the endurance of God and the victory of God, the all-conquering and enduring forces of nature. It stands for animal drives and proclivities, the senses and passions, instinct, unthinking reactions, the natural as opposed to the contrived. This is the sphere of Venus, ruler of nature and desire, and its force is used in magical operations of love. The Ainx, or wryneck, is a bird used in love charms. The wizards of classical antiquity spread-eagled the bird on a wheel and believed that in turning the wheel they turned the hearts of lovers. The spiritual experience of this sphere is a vision of triumphant beauty, and its angels are the beautiful Tasashim, one of whom Daniel saw in a vision. His body also was like the beryl, Tasish, and his face as the appearance of lightning. Chod, 8, female, the opposite sphera, is the sphere of mental faculties. It stands for the powers of imagination and fancy, inspiration, intuition, insight, which the Kabbalists regard as the higher capacities of the mind. Like the other spherot on the left of the tree, it has a decidedly evil side, reason and logic, which the Kabbalah distrusts, and all the constricting apparatus imposed on the mind through upbringing and training to regulate the impulses of the natural man, whose sphere is significantly placed on the good side of the tree. Chod lies behind considered and unnatural reactions, schooled or conventional attitudes, artificiality, contrivance, ingenuity, and cunning. The Bnei Elohim are the sons of God, the fallen angels who looked on the daughters of men and saw that they were fair and taught them all arts and crafts, and they marked the contrast with the artlessness of Netzach. Mercury was the god of intelligence, communication, business, and trickery, but also of magic, insight, and true wisdom. The hermaphrodite was a common symbol for Mercury, the metal, in alchemy. The twin serpents, emblems of wisdom and guile, come from Mercury's staff, the caduceus. The force of Mercury is used in magical attempts to gain knowledge or see into the future and in operations of deceit. Netzach and Chod are balanced and combined in Yesod, 9, the sphere of the moon. The moon is the ruler of night, a light in the darkness, and Yesod is the dark depths of the personality in which the shining true self lies hidden. 9 is the number of initiation into the mysteries of occultism and promises high spiritual achievement. The moon is the mistress of magic, and Yesod is the potential magical power of the self, which springs from the combination of man's highest mental faculties with the animal driving forces of his being. The angels are the messengers and ministers, Hod, Mercury, of Psalm 104, which are also natural forces, Netzach, who makest the winds thy messengers, fire and flame thy ministers. The elephant shows the union of high intelligence and brute strength in the same creature, and Yesod's plant is the aphrodisiac mandrake, the most powerful of all plants in magic. The magical power of the self is linked with creativity. In Yesod, the child becomes full-grown, able to reproduce, to create both sexually and mentally. When the spherot are shown as a human body, Yesod is the genitals. It is a bisexual sphere, and the moon is associated with the phallus of the male because both increase and diminish, and with the sexual rhythm of the female. Yesod is the link between Teferet, the sun or the life force, and Malkut, the earth or the body. And Plutarch says of the moon in Isis and Osiris, quote, she is receptive and made pregnant by the sun, but she in turn emits and disseminates into the air generative principles, unquote. In other words, moonlight is reflected sunlight, and Yesod is the spout for the waters from on high, as the Zohar says, the channel between the creative power of God and the earth or earthly man. In magic, the force of the moon is used in operations of love and reconciliation, and in necromancy, which is the bringing to life of dead bodies. Finally, Malkut, 10, is the sphere of earth. Demeter and Ceres ruled fertility and agriculture, and Persephone represents crops and vegetation because she spent the winter underground with her husband Hades and returned to Earth's surface in the spring. The cherubim are composite creatures, part human, part animal, part bird, which stand for the union of the elements from which all earthly things are made. But Malkut is also the whole kingdom of God. It contains the forces of all the spherot within itself, and when the tree is shown as a human body, Malkut is the union of the whole body. Its number is 10, which means all things. The Sphinx of Thebes had a woman's head and breasts, a bull's body, a lion's paws, a dragon's tail, and a bird's wings. It is a symbol of the four elements, bull, lion, dragon, bird, with the quintessence, woman, the fifth element of classical theory, the pure material of which the heavens are made. It stands for the unity of all things, heaven and earth taken together. And the Sphinx is also a symbol of the riddle, the universe as a great enigma, which the mystic and the magician attempt to solve. To explore the world of the Sphirot, you must disentangle yourself from the world of everyday life. A man cannot wander through the landscape of the spheres until he is free from all the physical sensations, thoughts, and worries which keep him tied to his usual surroundings. The physical and mental exercises of the Kabbalists are designed to achieve this. The Kabbalist learns mastery of both his body and his mind. He trains himself to stay perfectly still for long periods of time and to do this in awkward positions, kneeling and resting on his heels, his back and head rigidly straight, his hands on his thighs, or standing on his right foot, holding his left ankle with his right hand, his left forefinger touching his lips. In these positions, he must be able to breathe evenly and in a regular rhythm, for example, breathing in for 10 seconds, holding the breath for 30 seconds, breathing out for 20 seconds, continuing in this way for an hour. He imposes all sorts of rules on himself. For a week or more, he never allows himself to cross his legs or raise his left arm higher than his waist. He takes some common word, as common as and or but, and does not let himself use it, or he avoids using any word which has a T or an S or some other letter of the alphabet in it. He picks a subject which particularly interests him and takes care not to think about it or anything connected with it for a week or longer. When he fails in any of these exercises, as he naturally will at first, he punishes himself. Crowley suggested cutting one's arm with a razor. Concentration and imagination are vitally important in magic. The Kabbalist learns to concentrate his whole attention on one thing, at first a simple object, a black oval or a red triangle, later a moving object, a wheel turning or a pendulum swinging. He concentrates on imagined sensations, the smell of a rose, the feel of velvet, the ticking of a watch. He must imagine and concentrate with such intensity that the object or sensation is present in his mind to the exclusion of everything else, but he must also be able to banish it utterly from his consciousness at will. Eventually, he must be able to put himself into a trance in which he can totally disregard his body, focus his entire being on one thought, or prevent any thought whatever from entering his mind. Blind and deaf to anything which might tug him back to the normal world, the Kabbalist can adventure into the realm of the Sphirot. He imagines his own body as if it was standing in front of him. He must have a clear, vivid mental picture of it. Then he transfers his consciousness to the imaginary body so that he sees through its eyes and hears through its ears. This body is his astral body, astral double, or body of light, a replica of the physical body made of finer material. It is capable of moving freely through space and can pass through apparently solid objects. The world which this body perceives is the astral plane, which includes the ordinary physical plane but extends beyond it. The threshold of this plane is in Yesod, the sphere of the moon, which in the old cosmology was the connecting point between the pure spheres of the heavens above it and the corruptible world of earth beneath it. When he is comfortably settled in his astral body, the Kabbalist makes it rise high in the air. He will become aware of landscapes and figures, apparently human or animal. Such have a quality all their own, Crowley says. They are not like material things. They are not like mental pictures. They seem to be between the two. The Kabbalist explores the strange country he has entered and speaks to any of the figures which approach him, but he must be cautious. The figures may try to deceive and ensnare him. Quote, "Every spirit, up to God himself, is ready to deceive you, if possible, to make himself out more important than he is, in short, to lay in wait for your soul in 333 separate ways," unquote. These spirits are the equivalents in the universe of factors within the Kabbalist himself. The delusions into which they may entice him are self-delusions on a greater scale. In this mysterious world, the aspiring Kabbalist needs guideposts to help him find his way about and avoid pitfalls. The guideposts are provided by the system of correspondences, which lists the creatures, plants, colors, jewels, scents, and symbols associated with the Sefirot and the 22 paths. 22 lines drawn on the diagram of the Tree of Life, which connect the Sefirot together, and are the paths the Kabbalist takes from one Sefira to another. If the occult traveler believes he is in the region of Netzach, the sphere of Venus, and he sees a horse or a jackal, he knows that something has gone wrong. The horse belongs to Mars, the jackal is a beast of the moon. He would expect to see doves or sparrows or a spotted beast, a leopard or a lynx, perhaps, which are the creatures of Venus. If he is working up the 22nd path, which leads from Malkut to Yesod, and he meets a figure in a scarlet robe, he knows he has strayed from the way. This path belongs to Saturn, and the color of Saturn is black.